Okay, we have a quorum. It's 3:02, and I'd like to bring the ESAC Waste Diversion Collections and Education Subcommittee to order. Item one, got roll call. Fred Ariza,
Here.
Margo Garcia,
Here.
Doug Jennings,
Here.
and Trevor Ledbetter.
Here.
And Chris Yarder here. Okay. Let's see. Item two, I don't really have a report for you, so that'll make things go by quickly. Item three, Deputy Director's report. So
We'll skip
is
for
Pat
now
going to
until
show?
Pat comes on.
Okay, we'll skip. Well, we can go ahead and have Robert do the item four safety update.
Hello, good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm gonna ask Nadia if she can help me with the presentation that I have. I'm not really familiar with Zoom, so my apologies. Take
Should
care.
have to apologize.
It's an acquired taste. It takes a while.
Nadia, can you share the presentation, please? Okay. So going over, got some just a little data right here, and then we'll go and I'll talk about some videos that are attached to this here. So from the last time that I did a presentation to now, it pretty much covered the span of March 2026 to May 2026, and all the incidents that we had during that time frame. On the graph chart, what I attached was kind of sharing what the current year versus last year at this same time and the number of incidents that we've had and kind of compare those to this date compared to last year. So for March, kind of go over the numbers here. We've had a one vehicular accident that what we considered preventable, meaning when we say preventable, non-preventable, it basically is another word of saying at fault, not at fault. So we do have accidents where they might not be at fault. So that in March, we had one vehicular accident. Property damage is probably the number one thing that, it's always the top of our list of the incidents that we get involved in. So for March, we had four preventable incidents and then one non-preventable incident. So the outcome of the investigation and whatnot found that that person, the operator, when they went in, it was nothing that he could do. It was non-preventable. When we talk about others, that might be an incident where it's something that's related to like say an altercation or some kind of just an out of the box type of situation. In this case, it was something that had to deal with our work crew for at the landfill with the inmates. So that we put that as an other subject. And then when we talk about hot loads, and as you can see here, we had one hot load that was non-preventable. Pretty much it's the unpredictable event. But what a hot load is, when we talk about that, it's when the contents and inside the vehicle, the body of the vehicle catches fire. So our operators are can experience two types of fires. One is a vehicular fire, something on underneath the cab, on the body somewhere. So we would consider that a vehicle fire. And then a hot load is all the contents, whether it be garbage or recycle, that catches fire. We would consider that a hot load. So that breaks down March. And if you look at April, then the numbers that we had were two vehicular preventable accidents, one non-preventable, and then property damage, again, eight preventable, one non-preventable. We had one injury. Injuries are, unscheduled events, so more likely, unless the investigation finds something otherwise. But for the most part, they would be non-preventable because, they can't predict when they're going to get injured. Oil spills, we are always dealing with, spills that we would incur out there in the field. These vehicles, they're running all day long. They get overheated. The hoses that, that are on the vehicles, there's a lot of hoses on these trucks. They can experience a mechanical failure, and we will, have it result in a large oil spill. We're talking in the excess of several gallons, all the way up to maybe even 50 gallons if they don't catch it fast enough. And
What
then
does that
many
do
would
to the truck if you have a if you have 50 gallons of oil coming out of the truck, does the truck stop?
that sometimes when if they're going in a straight forward direction and not making very many left or right turns, they could end up losing everything before they even realize that
Okay.
they dumped everything on the ground. And then it might cover several city blocks, by the time that operator even realizes it. So we try to teach and coach here in our tailgates that we have, that they should be looking at their mirrors. They should be observing everything, at all times. They really have to depend on their cameras, on their mirrors a lot when they're traveling. Understand, the path that they took. If they see something out of the ordinary, that they're instructed, they need to stop and look. It could be something, as simple as cooking oil, paint, water that got inside the container. It could be a number of things. So we got to make sure that, they stop and they inspect it to ensure that it's not nothing coming from underneath the vehicle. Also, to that, when these guys, we encourage them, they get fatigued, get out, stretch. They might get out and do a special service. To when they return to their vehicle, they should be walking around and looking at their vehicle to make sure that they don't have anything that could become a mechanical failure or a breakdown. We talk about this a lot in our tailgates. And just to wrap up, May. The property damages here, two preventable, non-preventable. We had two injuries that are non-preventable. So that right there kind of covers the 3 month gap, this go around. Any questions with that you might have as far as the numbers?
Can you tell us a little bit more the injuries? What kind are they? Took them to the hospital, or they just hurt their leg, or?
Yeah, so with injuries, we have a lot of them are trips and falls.
Okay.
So when you get people walking around in the landfill and if on the uneven surfaces and so forth,
Sure.
they can trip coming down off of a vehicle. A boot might get caught on a run and cause them to trip or fall. Even walking out of our building here, with the steps that we have here, if you're not paying attention, you could actually, end up, tripping yourself.
On your fault,
So
please. Yeah.
that's one of the number one things that we have. And other than that, knock on wood, we haven't had anything as far as hand or head injuries or anything of
Yeah.
that nature. We really, really push these guys to make sure they understand when they're walking around or even doing their work to pay attention on what they're doing. So as
And
far as injuries, it's pretty good.
Robert, is this for all the lines of business, residential, commercial, roll-off, and the landfill?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
For
okay, everything.
yep, this would be all sections.
And
Even the office staff, huh? If you want, you'll be surprised. Actually, one of the injuries for May was an office staff. So,
wasn't from a softball game, was it? Okay.
no. We had one of our office staff got injured just walking out the door. So,
It
luckily,
happens.
it's few and far between for them, but yeah, it does happen.
And the non-preventable property damage, what does that look like? I mean, preventable, I can understand you backed up and hit a wall. Okay.
Right. So actually, I'm going to have an example here of
Okay.
what that non-preventable was when we go into that
Okay.
discussion with the videos. Sometimes we've had cases and just off really strange and incidents where somebody's just servicing a container, and for whatever reason, a resident is tying that container to the fence. You don't see the wires, you know.
Oh.
And next you know we're taking a section of the fence down, and the driver never even seen that it was tied to it. Let me see what other examples that we have that are non-preventable.
I've heard about the utility meters in alleyways where there's a bunch of weeds and stuff,
Right.
and the
And
trucks accidentally will knock over the gas meter or something. That does
exactly.
that happen very often?
It happens not a lot, but it does happen. For example, our brush and bulky people, when the residents are not maintaining the back alleyways and it's overgrown, the water meters are very hard to find, really hard to
Oh,
find.
water meters.
Or when the vegetation is growing out and impeding the right of way, you can actually go just, drive by a gas meter and you'll never see it. So we had those incidents where we hit a fixed object, a utility, and we never seen it, because it's overgrown with vegetation of some kind. Even the going down an alleyway and they're servicing these containers, and because of monsoon season or the tree is growing, a lot, that those branches and all that can actually manipulate and actually start hanging up on those wires. And before you know it, when the driver's going through it, that particular section, they could actually bring down a telephone or a cable service drop because of that. So
Wow.
those are the things that we see that we can't see, because, they try to pick it out as much as they can. We try to teach them when they're driving to assess everything that they're getting into, but it's those little things like that that will always come up and catch us.
Yep. Okay.
Okay, can you go to the next slide? Let's see if we can get that video to play. Hopefully it will. So this is a gentleman that this is that non-preventable, and what we find here, you'll see him driving, he's climbing the curb, going into an alleyway where this wash, the Alamo wash, it's a protected wash. So he's going in, and being that it's the trimming, you really just can't go in there and clear it out. You could see when he comes in, he's really making an effort. And now if you look to the cameras to the right, you could see how much he's into the brush and the trees. What just so happened, and on this one, that on that fence there's an angle iron that was designed as a cap, and he actually dislodged a section of it. He sit there, he notices it, and he's looking at it, and then he identified it. Now he's going to get a hold of his supervisor so that way he can respond to that. So this is one of the incidents that we looked into and came to find out because of the stipulations with the wash. It was unavoidable to a certain extent because they have very limited room to operate in certain areas. And as you can see, if you can go to the next slide, please, Nadia. We did go in there and we actually did minimal trimming. Mr. Luna and the crew would they responded, and they actually, without moonscaping everything, they went in, did a little bit of trimming here and there, and now it actually gives the operators, when they travel through there, enough room for them to position the vehicle and have the room so that way they can service that container safely. Now, here in the future, on that picture on the left there, that one tree that's against that wall, it's going to become a problem. So we try to tell these guys, to start talking about it. Just don't let it grow over to a big old tree, and then next we're actually causing more damage. So that tree eventually is going to get addressed. So these are everyday things that we encourage our operators when they're out there, when they have a vegetation problem. identify it, recognize it, and report it, get a good address. So that way, one step one, we'll get the resident involved, give them the opportunity to go in and trim the trees and so forth, what they need to do. And then if they don't and it doesn't happen, then what's going to happen is we'll end up having to do it ourselves. Robert?
Doesn't code enforcement get called on things like that?
Yes, code enforcement, they
Yeah.
do get called on it. Code enforcement, in some cases they will go out and respond and address some of these issues. So it with code enforcement, as long as and with our operators, because they're technically they're their eyes and ears, they're the ones that are always out there every day. Them two working together, those two sections, this is how we hope to address these issues.
Is it not possible to relocate the pickup point for this location, or is this like the only feasible pickup?
It is possible to when we get into situations, and now more than ever, we're starting to look at that, where if it's always been a hazard or still continues to be a hazard, we are now more likely to convert out of the alley service. And for many reasons, if you can only imagine this, what he got into, and Brush and Balky going in there, it really makes it a difficult, maneuvers to get these trucks in there. So when that
Totally.
happens, the operators and the supervisors, they will start addressing it and identifying it and convert. They're going to try trimming it and maintaining it that at first, but if it doesn't, if it's still a hazard, then they will convert.
Gotcha. Just, I mean, yeah, and that's good to hear, but especially since this is a wash and not like a shared alley, it seems like it's going to continue to become an overgrown problem for the city, and we're just going out there time and time again to
Right.
trim.
And that's the thing. Every summer, every year, spring, we have to stay on top of these, and it's always one of these things that these drivers have to identify constantly.
Won't the other departments like fire and police want to keep that clear too, so that they can get any vehicles back there if they need to?
Yeah, they would. And normally when we have a situation like that, that they will come across and say, hey, there's a problem here. They normally would notify the department, and then we would respond, so that way we can, address it. And sometimes it might be in the jurisdictions of transportation, and so they will go through that avenue with DTM, and they will also be addressing that. Like, for example, these washes, it's mainly the responsibility of the transportation department, but they have a cycle that they go through, from my understanding, with the washes. But when something like this happens, we have the means, we can go and we can respond a little quicker as well.
Well, I think it's amazing what the truck drivers can manage. That last one you showed us is phenomenal, that he was able to
Yeah,
maneuver that
I agree. Yeah.
and still pick up that can. I mean, the
Yeah.
can is blocked.
I always tell people, and even new employees that we get in, and I don't I always say that our department, what we do, it's not normal. It's not normal to reach out and grab that container on the side of a vehicle. A lot of these guys that we get that are new, they're over the road truckers, or they've driven buses and they do things, they've driven big vehicles, but it's not normal to go in an alleyway with a large vehicle and do what they do. So, yeah, it's something that they have to deal with every day.
It's
Okay,
amazing.
Nadia, can you go to the next one, please? Next video. Now, this one here, this is you're gonna see on the right. You're looking forward, and now you're looking at going backwards. So this particular driver, he's backing up, and in this compound, this complex, it's a private property. And one of the biggest issues that we were dealing with was overgrown trees that were growing out into the right of way. Now, I get it. I love large trees, causes a lot of, shade and makes it look nice. But we have to have a right of way to go in and do what we do, picking up our containers. So he was backing up, and you'll see here, this tree right there on the left, in the upper left corner, and you'll see that black car. Well, you're gonna see it's gonna disappear here in a minute. You can see the trajectory of the vehicle backing up, and he gets a big, large branch, and next you know, both vehicles are underneath that branch, that tree. And then he pulls forward so that way he can go and assess on what took place. So what turns out that this is pretty much not a non-preventable property damage, because we have on this case several documented outreach with that property manager saying, hey, we have a problem here. Your trees are growing out into the right of way. We need it to be trimmed back, because we can cause an accident. So when they came in and they had this accident, and it knocked that tree over, because our operator was, letting supervision know, letting our customer service know. We even let the company, the management company, know there's a problem. He wasn't held accountable for this, because he was backing up. He's maneuvering that large vehicle. This is what we call a front load vehicle. They're the ones that pick up the metal dumpsters. They're pretty long and pretty tall. So as he was backing up, he ended up clipping that branch, and it just happened to come down on their vehicles. Our brush and bulky folks had a response, so that way they can cut up underneath those vehicles from underneath that tree. Luckily, no damage to the vehicles, was reported. So all we had to do was just trim away that tree. So we encourage our operators to always report damage prior to service, and always report. This is what I'm talking about, the vegetation. Always report that, so that way at least they're covered when they go out there. It's somebody knows that, hey, we have a problem here. Okay. Next video here, please. Okay, this one here is kind of hopefully not too gruesome for folks, but it's an e-bike. This is something that we deal with on a daily basis when we're out there, especially when the U of A is in session and so forth. This gentleman, he's going westbound on Speedway. I really can't get into a lot on this because it's in litigation, but when they're being told to always scan their side mirrors and their cameras and all that, just to be prepared for the unexpected, and just a simple right-hand turn turned into, this gentleman and his e-bikes. If you look at the specs on e-bikes, they're different types of e-bikes, and these things, they move really fast. So this is something that our operators is one of many, many things that they have to do and look for and account for when they're just the simplest making a left or right-hand turn is looking for pedestrians and bicyclists and e-bikes. It's a concern, and we actually have that concern, and it's even upstate. That's something that it's always a top subject in their safety meetings in reference to this. That person came out of nowhere. We could not find out where he came from, but yeah, ended up in an unfortunate situation. So I can't really go in more detail in this because of that. So I'm very limited on the information that I have. So I just want to express and just point out the e-bikes and one of the many things that they have to watch out for. One thing that we tell our operators is when you're driving, even driving your own personal vehicle, there's a thing called cushion of safety. You want to put a bubble around your car, and this is in that bubble, that's what you're responsible for, and always looking out for different things, using your mirrors, your rear view mirror, everything that's you're available to you to always be scanning and not just become complacent and just looking straight ahead. So this is always an ongoing topic that we do.
Well,
Robert, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, did you remove, because the other ones we've had more cameras, did you remove some of the camera pictures from this?
I'm
Because,
sorry, the camera pictures?
yeah, I mean, because there must have been a camera to the side because he
Yeah,
absolutely
so
was not visible. But I mean, because of the court
yeah,
case, I'm
good
sure you.
question. So these vehicles, we do have cameras that are they actually have a left-hand camera, so they can see what's on their left-hand side. This gentleman, all our vehicles with our residential collections, it's right-hand driven, so they're everybody's on the right-hand side. So the real blind spots, the emphasis is on the left-hand side. And as an operator, and when driving out there, you know, we always coach and tell, can you eliminate all blind spots? And the answer is no, you cannot. You cannot, eliminate all. So one of the techniques that we always push and teach is you need to move your head, you know, basically a bobblehead, you know, move your head around so that way you can enhance the view on your mirrors and always be looking at your monitor. Even the rear view camera that's on, so they have to be scanning a lot, you know. So in this case, they didn't the cat being on a right hand side, and that's where that gentleman was at. He was in a blind spot right behind the vehicle, so some of the views of the that he had at that vantage point probably didn't catch him moving that fast, you know. So that's one thing that possibly would, you know, ended up where we're at with this one here.
That's a tough call to
Well,
make. Those
sorry.
guys go too fast.
I'm sorry, what's that?
They get way too fast with those e-bikes.
Very, very
Yeah,
fast.
actually, I think he's in the wrong lane if he's going that fast.
Yeah, it was a slight. There's a bike lane right there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he wasn't wearing a bike helmet. You know, and that's the other thing. You know, in that education to bicyclists and all that, having that protective gear and so forth. So, give some form of protection. Okay, can you go to the next slide, please?
Those are Darwin Awards. Sorry. I just had to add
So this one here, our last one is a hot load. And with this one here, they're unpredictable. Okay. And the
Yeah, this
examples
one.
are, you know, batteries, chemicals, hot coals, a lot of things. And this is one of our senior operators. And the thing to point out, this is over there on Main and Speedway. Straight in front of him on that camera to right in front of him, that's a city park. And we always tell them, you know, when you have a hot load, you need to go to a space where you can eject that load out. And a park, city property is probably the best place you can go to. So this right here is telling me that it caught him off guard and it grew so fast that he wasn't, it made him kind of like in a panic mode slightly. He was going to a place that he knew was an open lot. But when he got there, right there off of Speedway and Main, that lot was fenced in, so he couldn't go anywhere other than a side street and eject everything out the back end. Now, the thing about that we train and teach with this hot loads is that the operators, what they need to do is they need to, in this case, what we have is a front load, and right in that little dark area on the right-hand picture there, that's what we call the blade. And it always pushes the load to the back of the truck, always packing. So what we try to do is we tell them, pack the load, meaning push that blade as far back as it goes, because you know you need three things to have a fire: oxygen,
Oxygen.
fuel, and an ignition point. So if you
Right.
could restrict the airflow, you might minimize that fire. But with this particular trucks that we got, every time we get new series of trucks, they always have some kind of different kind of quirks to them. It would have taken a long time for him to pack this load. And the problem that we have with this is we got to move quickly, because if that thing gets out of hand, we're talking about it could burn electrical wires, hydraulic lines, and next thing you know, we would have that load inside the truck on fire, and we could potentially lose that whole truck to a fire. We've had that done, or that happened twice, where it wasn't ejected out fast enough and we end up losing that whole truck.
What caused the fire?
This gentleman here, you know, again, assessing his areas, assessing what to do, he quickly thought about, I know my route, this is where I'm going to go. He had a park right across the street, because they had to dump it out, they had to eject it out, and they're calling 911. He did, when he was in fact, in this scenario, I hate to say it, but He called 911, I think it was three times, and they didn't respond.
Course.
It wasn't until he dumped out is when they called him back, and then the fire department came. So it was kind of concerning, like, whoa, that it took him a while for them to respond on this one. So the
What?
fire, when they ejected out, they're instructed to move the vehicle away about 100 feet. So that way, we protect the vehicle, we don't lose it. But the main thing to remember is don't dump it near a business, a building, trees. Don't go on to Walmart's parking lot. Don't go into a school parking lot. They gotta be thinking a lot really quickly, so where they know where they need to dump out. If it all else fails, get right in the middle of the street and dump it out and move that vehicle away.
What caused that fire?
So we believe that the way it as quickly as it ignited, we're thinking it was a battery. That's probably the majority of the causes of our hot loads are these ion batteries and so forth. They ignite quickly, people throw them away, and that's probably one of the biggest causes.
Well, that would be exciting. That would make your whole day, right?
Yeah, that does, so there's a lot that goes into once this happens and Tucson Fire comes out, extinguish the fire, then we have to get our BMB crew, our brush and bulky guys to go out there and they pick up all the remnants and so forth. So yeah, it becomes a little nice little tedious task.
I hope you then give the driver off the rest of the day to calm down.
Oh, actually it was they dump it out now. Okay, let's go back for more. That's one less trip I have to make, I
Oh,
guess.
really?
I don't know, but
Amazing.
So,
Oh, geez.
any questions?
Very interesting. Thank you. And again, just makes me appreciate the drivers even more with what they have to do. That is quite astonishing.
Yes, ma'am. These operators, they go into places that, it's not for the faint of heart. And through monthly tailgates and reminders from our risk management team and from ourselves, the supervisors, and what I do, we really put a lot of emphasis and reminders of what they should be looking for. Don't forget about this. Don't forget about that. We sound almost like a broken record, but it's through that repetitive coaching that we do that, we do get that feedback saying, hey, I'm glad you reminded me because it actually saved me today, kind of in a sense. So
Yeah, I can see
an
that.
ongoing thing that we do.
That's really good work. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
You're
thank
welcome.
you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Thanks. Okay, let's move on to let's see. Oh, Pat's here. Pat, are you ready to do the deputy director's report?
I can. How's everybody doing?
Goody.
Good. Good.
Oh, okay.
Missed the
Sorry for
fire.
being late.
You
Sorry for
missed
being late.
the fire. So, quick director's update. I think everybody heard about the fees, right?
Yay.
Right. Thank you
Who
guys all for your
watches mayor
support.
and council meetings? Raise your hand. Not recently. How long back can we count? Okay.
Well, I think kudos to everybody. I mean, everybody in the department, the customer study, you guys working with us and putting our to rates. So thank you guys all for the support. It took everybody on the team to actually provide those all that information so that actually we got that awarded. So we got 75 cents that's going to be going out to all our residential customers, and then the $3 clean city fee. One thing the city manager has asked us to put for us to put together a draft plan on how we're going to be utilizing the $3. So we're drafting that up now. Kind of finalize that today. I'll share that with you guys all, probably either tomorrow, probably send it all out to you, the draft one, so you guys can have that and you see it, read it. So we're pretty excited about that. We're working with everybody to make sure the fees are going to be put in place. We're working with Tucson Water right now as they do all our billing for us. So we want to make sure all the rates are in place for all our customers. Because we also did a lot of changes in Chapter 15, which we have not done in a good gosh, I want to say close to 15 years that we haven't really updated our chapter 15. So all the landfill rates, all the special fees, everything that we've kind of just been stagnant for all those years have all been changed. So now the fun, the work goes into it to making sure that all of those are correct in all our systems that we're billing appropriately. So all of that is in place. We're also got a hold of South Tucson because we have an IGA agreement with South Tucson for providing those services to the 1,200 households. So we got a hold of their city manager. We do not have to modify the IGA. They just renewed it for 5 years. And in the current IGA that we have, it allows the city to make appropriate route changes every July 1st without us having to go back and redo the IGA. So we're good on that. Only thing that she's going to be doing on South Tucson is letting their council aware that the residents are going to be receiving an increase. And they receive an increase higher than what we bill our own city residents. And the reason being is because they are outside city limits. So any customers that the city provides service to outside of city limits, we have to keep track of because we have to pay in lieu of state taxes. Something that we don't have to do with our residential customers. So we charge them a little bit more to make up for that. So every year we calculate that and we cut the state a check for those customers. So we got that's squared away. The other agreement that we have is with Winter Haven. Winter Haven has a special agreement with us. And what they do is they get twice a week trash pickup and they get once a month brush and bulky pickup. But they pay extra. So the residents themselves receive the initial service charge. So the $23 that we charge residents, all the residents in Winter Haven get that bill. So they're going to get the $75 or 75 cent increase and the $3 increase. Winter Haven Neighborhood Association does a separate agreement with us for the second trash pickup every for 52 weeks a year. There's a second trash pickup, which you do on Thursdays. Normal pickup on Monday, second pickup on Thursday. Then once a month, we go out and pick up their brush and bulky piles, which is, I'd say, 80% of it's green waste. There's so much, green waste that's in Winter Haven that they do a lot of trimming the trees, especially the landscapers. So they leave it out there and we pick it all up. That rate, we also look to increase it. We sent them an email yesterday letting them know that their rate was going to be going up from the $11 and some change for those services, which is a really great rate for all those services, to the $18. We got an email back from their neighborhood president saying, how about we eliminate the second trash pickup and just stick to brush and bulky? And what is that rate going to look like? So what we did is we took the current rate of the $18, said 33% of that service is basically for the brush and bulky, 66 point some percent is actually for the refuse pickup. So we broke it down and it came down to $5.94 that we're proposing to them for just doing the brush and bulky pickup once a month. And that charge is for 10 months because they get the 2 months free because that's our normal brush and bulky. So that's why for 10 months out of the year, we bill them extra for the brush and bulky. I know that was a lot and fast, and I don't know if you were able to stay with that. I mean, that's kind of where we're at on the fees.
So, do you think Winter Haven's going to accept that? They like that number better?
I'm sure they're going to like the number better. I'm not sure what the board is going to say. This was just the president. And I think they wanted to have options to take to them and say, hey, this is our rate. We're going up to $18 to continue to do this. They pay for that. It's the, I'm sure they bill the residents,
For
but
sure, out of
the
their taxes.
association pays it. But that's out of their I'm sure their HOA fee, I'm sure that they're probably paying. But we gave them those options. We'll wait to hear back from them.
So why did they want the second trash pickup?
They say they've always generated more trash than anybody else, so they were willing to pay for a second pickup. I could
Interesting.
disagree with them because I think there's probably less than 50% of their containers out on the second day. But if they want to pay for it, that's totally up to them.
And what happens? The recycling stays the same once every 2 weeks?
Correct. No change on recycling.
So how long have they been doing this?
10 years, maybe.
10 years.
Wow.
Okay.
Ten
I've heard
years.
of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, the one that actually initiated it and started was Andrew Quigley when he was here. So what was that?
Oh,
That
Quigley.
was in 08, 09, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Gosh, almost 15, 16 years, I guess now.
Yeah.
Time flies. The other thing is we have our landfill rates that are all going up for the residents. I'm sure you saw all those. Those are going to be going up $3 per ton. We'll be working with the we have four put or pay agreements with Stanback, Republic, Waste Connection, and LDS. So LDI, trash companies, and they get a special rate because they bring in more tons. But they're all going to be receiving that $3 increase. The only thing that it'll go up is when theirs expires. Because right now we have annual agreements with them and they're not at, on July 1st. I wish they all were. But some of them are like, in actually 2 or 3 months, like the August, September timeframe. But the minute theirs expires, then we're going to increase them, let them know that everyone is going up to $3 per ton rate, which is good. So we're
Yeah.
pretty happy about that. It's going to be some good revenue. I think the biggest challenge is going to be the $3 fee. And like I said, I'll share that fee with you and that plan. Obviously, when we presented this, it was to allow our Brush and Bulky to utilize all the staffing that we needed to stay caught up with Brush and Bulky. Because right now, we should have 8 or 9 crews working on Brush and Bulky, but three of those crews are always being diverted every day to either picking up homeless camps or illegal dumping. And this $3 fee now allows us to hire an additional 16 people so that we can designate those three crews to doing nothing but that, and then have those three crews go back to the Brush and Bulky. Since we're going to be going back come January 1st, we'll be going back to the old Brush and Bulky collection schedule for all areas. So the two pilot areas that we were practicing or testing out the
Sure.
by appointment program is will be eliminated. Those are going to go away, and we're going back to a full-blown scheduled Brush and Bulky for citywide.
So
Now that
is that $3 fee, is that part of the Clean Cities fee?
it is,
Okay.
yeah.
Perfect. Perfect.
It's all the three clean city fee. And the reason we're working with Tucson Water on that is because it's going to be a separate line item. It's really good. So when you get your bill on your
Good.
water bill, it's going to have, your residential fee. It's going to have that litter clean or recycling fee. And then it's going to have a clean city fee so that you're always going to see that $3. And we chose to have it that way because I think it has to be a little bit more transparent, so that they can actually see what that money is being utilized for.
Right,
Because it's
right.
not only for illegal dumping in homeless camps, it's also for graffiti abatement, which,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, so you got, there's five things on there, which is you have graffiti abatement, you got the homeless work program, which was in Ward 5, illegal dumping, homeless camp cleanups, and then team up to clean up neighborhood cleanups that we really want to enhance a lot more. So those five things are being covered through the $3 fee.
When you got the comments from the public, were there any many comments on the $3 special fee?
Very little. I know we received very at the public hearing for the city manager, I mean, there was zero. No one came to the call audience on that. And then when we had all the outreach programs, we had maybe two inquiries as to
Yeah.
all, the only thing that we would hear on the negative side was that we shouldn't have to be paying to clean up homeless camp cleanups. They should be cleaning up for themselves.
Good luck.
So,
Good luck.
exactly.
Well, I think one thing that's a little PR piece that this will help with is that people will see on their bill that there is actually money going to clean up, because people always say, oh, the city isn't cleaning up, it isn't doing this and so forth. And here they can see there's funds committed to doing that. So I think it's a positive to have its own line. And I remember we discussed it last year when we were thinking about it, whether to include it into the trash overall or a separate line. I think the separate line was a good choice.
It's a positive, but it's also an added pressure.
Sure.
Because I mean, once they see this $3 feed, there's going to be a lot of expectations, right? And which is warranted. My only worry at this point is that it's not a flip of the switch on July 1. It's taken a long time to get the city to look the way it is, and we're going to be getting these fees, but it's not like right off the bat the $3 is all in house. I mean, when you look at this, every month we'll be getting an additional 445,000, and it's going to take months to get and build up that money till now we can actually pay for the trucks, pay for the people coming on board. So it's not, it's going to take a good 5, 6 months to stand everything up, with all the people that we're going to have to hire and the equipment we're going to have to get. And I'm just trying to let everybody know ahead of time that it's not like all of a sudden July 1, we're going to be sending out, these three additional crews to clean up all the corridors. That it's not gonna work that way. You got to be a little bit patient and give us the opportunity to staff them.
I hope you get a press release out on that so people understand that and a little bit of the jobs involved. How, especially like recruiting workers, you can even make it as part of it. Anybody who wants to come and work on this, come apply for a job, that there are these new things. And the fact that the trucks, take so long to get. I mean, I think people need to appreciate that. You don't walk down to Jim Quick and order a garbage truck.
I wish it was that easy.
Yeah, I'm
You know, I
sure
do
you
kind of
do.
worry about neighborhoods like mine. So, everybody throws their mattress out when they move out. It's hard to get the owners to do anything. So I guess
I
we'll
think.
be paying for those people too, or like the students that are renting places, and when they leave school, they just put it all out in front of their rental. Yeah.
That's what we're going to be doing. I mean, that's part of the illegal dumping.
Okay.
So
I
you
need to make some calls then after a while.
I mean that, like I said, once we staff it up and get people on
Yeah.
board, I mean, that was our goal. Was if you keep hearing for years and years, we've been talking about, okay, how are we going to get code enforcement? We're going to cite the people and we're going to go through that,
Takes
which I understand.
forever.
I totally respect that. But unfortunately, it's a procedure, it's a process. And that process takes 90 days, if not 6 months. So everyone kind of gives up during that time frame, and we end up just picking it up. So we kind of just throw our hands up and say, you know what, just give us a work order. We're going to go pick it up now, before it generates more. Is it the right thing or the wrong thing to do? I don't know. It's not going to be holding a lot of people accountable because we're just going to go get it picked up.
Yeah.
But we can't continue to allow the city to continue to look with as a dumping ground.
Yeah.
So that's all I had on the deputies. I was just really happy. We're really excited about the fees. We got a lot of work to do right now, making sure everything goes in place. Oh, we're going to also update our website so that people can go
Good.
on our website and click on there and just see, hey, what are the new rates and fees? We had taken them off our website for a long time. We're getting back to the point where no, let's put it back on the website. Because one thing that I do notice that we hear from a lot of other municipalities wanting to know what our rates and what our fees are for services, and they're always having to call us and get a hold of somebody. We end up having to do that too. It would be so much easier when we're able to go to somebody's website and just pull those down, especially when we're doing some research. It takes a lot longer having to try to contact somebody. And I said, we need to be, good stewardships and also share that information. So the other municipalities, while they're looking, they can see very easily what our rates are.
Good.
Well, I think it also
Thank
serves a
you.
purpose where it's out in the open and everybody knows what the rates are and there's nothing hidden or the suspicion of something hiding. So you're better off having it out in the open for access for everybody.
I agree. Be as transparent as possible.
Yes.
And they get the right numbers and don't start making up numbers.
That
Well,
is
they'll still
true.
do that.
Right.
You can't have numbers, yeah.
So that's all I had for my update.
Oh, good.
Thank you, Pat.
Thanks. Good
Thank
news.
you.
All right. So let's move on to item five. Brittany, you're going to do the MRF report.
Yes, and I will do a very high level report.
You
So
better. It's a good
you
thing this is recorded.
received the MRF report in the materials. This past month, we received just under about 1,800 tons delivered to the MRF. Recent, actually today, the we conducted a audit at the MRF. From that audit, our numbers are looking at 21% contamination rate versus the past 19.8 contamination rate.
Oh, okay.
So we went up slightly from the previous 3 months.
Yeah.
And then because of the higher contamination rate, we have the increase excess residue surcharge does go up from 50 cents per ton to $1.80 per ton. So
Okay.
from the report, other than that, I from looking from 1 month to the percentages, there wasn't much changes from March's to April's,
Except in plastics.
except in plastics.
It went from 476 to 550.
Okay.
Oh, okay, yeah. I get his percentage rate is not different, so I will let.
That's the percentage of the load is the same because you use the audit to determine that.
Oh, okay, thank you, Margo.
But the prices and the next price per ton is over the next
Oh,
one.
yes, the price
And
is
that's
different.
556 versus 476. So that's up. Other things, I mean, it's bouncing around. Paper went up a little bit.
We did
So if
also
you have
see.
additional, more in-depth questions, Christina can answer at the next meeting.
Okay.
Good news is we paid less
Well, right now, but
for April.
moving forward.
Moving
Onward.
forward will be bad.
Any other questions for Brittany?
And I can relay them to Christina, and then we can send out an email if you want, if we need to get back to everybody.
Do we? How does scheduling the audits work? Is that Republic saying we're going to do it this month, or do we have control over that?
It's a coordination, so for dates available for to come in to the MRF. They do need to kind of clean up the space when conducting the audit to make sure that the city of Tucson's loads are separated from the normal loads. So Ernesto does work with the operating staff. Oh, well, I guess Doug on?
You're exactly right. You're spot on,
Okay,
Brittany.
sorry.
That's
Great.
it.
Doug can
It's
actually share very in-depth details.
the Wednesday date seems to work best because you got a couple days to get the MRF ready. The night before the audit, the MRF is swept clean, everything's emptied out. And the week before the audit, you're gathering the city's gathering 6 to 8 loads, random loads from different routes per day. So they'll start collecting them on Thursday, Friday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then run the audit on Wednesday.
Gotcha.
And they start
So,
very early, so they start the audit like at 5 o'clock in the morning.
yep.
Okay.
How much
So,
material is typically a part of an audit if we're doing 6 to 8 loads a day? Like,
well,
how
I
many
think
tons?
Ernesto has a handle on that, and they try to kind of do random
Yeah.
routes that haven't been picked before, so they get a good broadcast random selection of loads.
Yes,
Gotcha.
and that is exactly it. He does have, they are randomly selected.
Okay. Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. Thanks.
Let me switch my screen to the.
Public outreach.
Yes.
Okay, item six.
Okay. So in the material you got a kind of quick overview, a one pager of kind of the statistics from Recycle Coach. So this is kind of what the back end looks like. This is kind of where all the stats are pulled. So this first graph is sorry, depicting different engagements. So the impressions, so pieces of content displayed either on the web version of Recycle Coach or through the app, and the clicks that it's getting from the web user or the mobile user. So and these are from the difference from last month compared to this month. And then the green line is what it was the previous year. So basically it's saying that our engagement or the usage between last month and this month has dropped. So the time they've spent on Recycle Coach has dropped overall so many hours from one month to the next month. Moving down to our users. So this is comparing from this number here is what it has increased from last month. So we have 73 over 73,000 users that has downloaded the app. So those are downloaded apps. We are up from the previous year, so 69,000 from the previous year compared to 73. And then this 5.23% is what we are up compared to the previous month. So this is just the participation rate. And then here is what it is broken down per zone. So how many users? We have 2,800 users in zone A, or so, sorry, this would be the res this would be res the recycling A. So area 25. So this is the I should ask
Okay.
Christina how that's broken down. I would think it would be broken down by just by recycling areas versus
It appears
Thursday
to be.
collection. So let me ask that because it's different statistics between different zones.
Okay.
It's because the map, so the recycle since we l load the maps, we have recycle all the recycling maps in there, and then we have all the brush and bulky maps, so that's why it has the statistics broken down like that. So I'll just have to ask. So it's probably what they're identifying when they load sign up for the app, whether or not they're signing up as Area 22 or if they're signing up as res Thursday A recycling route. And then
Okay.
over here is the people that are actually reporting the problems. The most reported problems through the app is they want to report a missed pickup. And so this is how many missed pickups were reported through the app within the past month. So from the previous month, it's 30 down 31%. The next couple graphs are so there's through the app, there's customer or there's engagement quizzes where you can know where to throw quizzes. So this is just what customers are either researching when, or where you can look into the app, like information about food cycle or information about cooking oils and fats. So this is what's researched within the app for more information. And again, this is the all regarding the engagement on those quizzes and whether or not they got the questions right. So 84% of customers, well, they were correct when they were selecting the mail and flyers. So again, this is the
Yeah.
searched items. And this is the most searched items throughout the app. Alyssa does have, oops, I got signed out. So Alyssa does have the ability to push notifications. So if it's a fresh and bulky is going to be delayed for area 26, she does have the ability to push a notification that way. So she can do that here. And she does utilize that. She also utilizes Nextdoor for pushing information. So right now we have no active reminders. In the past, here's all her past reminders that are, this is, so just the MLK reminder. And then Jude pulls the reports here for the missed pickups. So that's how he generates the reports for, so the customers that report a missed pickup here or a container replacement, he has the ability to pull the report from here. This way he can do it in Navline or our billing system to generate a work order for that.
And I love my new cans.
Oh, good.
They no, you know what? They seem sturdier than the last ones I
Oh,
had
okay.
for a long time. I don't know if you get different people to buy them from or.
Yeah, I know that we've switched vendors or even the material that or how they're made.
Yeah. Okay. Much better.
And you have the ability to use the Recycle Coach app through the web. So a lot of our customer service reps will use the Recycle Coach app from our website. So
Okay.
I'm not, sorry, I'm not there. And so I feel like a lot of the users for the web are probably our own staff utilizing it sometimes.
Oh, okay.
There,
How
right.
often does the person who's looking after missed pickups and need a new can? How often do they look at the website or look at that dashboard every day?
So he gets email notifications.
Okay.
So in addition, so the email notification's going to him right away. But if he wants to pull the report with all the customer information, he can. Or if he wants to pull a report for a month's worth, he can. But he is getting each single notification with information. So one single email with that information. So
And then,
he's getting it two different ways.
so that information would be the name and the address. Okay.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
Any other questions?
The only thing I would say is that that decline in the last this year over the last months, has there been any discussion of why that might be happening? People have know it
The
all
biggest
or?
decline that we've seen around is normally in January, because what happens is people tend to get like new cell phones for around like Christmas time. And
Really?
so when they get the new cell phone, they don't install all the apps from the previous prior year. Or they, so we do see sometimes a drop in January, and then we'll kind of see a bump up sometimes. So and that's, that's what Christina shared with me, like just over the years from looking at the user information, where she's kind of seen the numbers fluctuate over the time, over the calendar year. But other than that, like we can't really know why there's a drop in user. So if customers are removing the app just because they don't seem to use it, or like I said, they just didn't re-download it from transferring all their phone data.
Okay. Everyone all right?
Yep.
Move on.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm guessing Frank's up.
You can now hear me? Okay. So my update is on landfill gas compliance, more so related to the notices of violations that we received. We're working through. So I just wanted to provide an update. That was requested at the last meeting. First off, we have, of course, we have through Pima County DEQ, we have received a notice of violation. And with them, we are working through an order of abatement by consent, an OAC, which was signed in August of 2025. As part of the OAC, we, the city, or ES, committed to doing an assessment of the gas collection system, which was basically an environmental mitigation plan. It has two parts to it, phase one and phase two. For phase one, it entailed doing a full assessment of all of our landfill gas wells, taking data. It took a lot of data, did a lot of field work. The evaluation of our system, our wells, and provided feedback on repairs that we could make. But also, a lot of that data was so that they can complete phase two, which is a strategic improvement plan for the gas collection system. As part of phase one, we also installed four new wells, landfill gas extraction wells. And as we were going through, and SCS engineers, our consultants, going through the assessment, that we discovered that there were some wells that needed to be replaced. So we went ahead and added another five wells. So a total of nine wells were added as part of phase one. So all of those wells were put in place back in February. And so they've been running well. And the report for phase one was completed on March 13 and submitted to the agency, Pima DEQ. So we do have that report. We're currently working on phase two, which is the improvement plan. So going into phase two, and our consultant come back out and do additional assessment of some wells that still need to have further assessment. And then they're also looked at our vacuum lines, our headers, and For all the ones that the laterals that connect to the extraction line. And so as part of that, there were several analyses that were done. One of them was a lateral gas model, and this is a traditional land gen model that's done for land choice. And what that does, it determines based on the years, the total waste mass that's in place. It estimates basically and projects how much landfill gas is being generated. And at a 70% extraction rate, then that's where the amount that can be extracted and collected through the gas collection system. So that model was completed already. That's going to go into the final report. And then the reason for doing that is because we also want to establish if we are properly collecting and extracting the landfill gas that's being generated. And the second analysis that was done is a KY pipe analysis, a model, and that establishes if we have the correct vacuum established for the whole system so that each wellhead is properly and efficiently extracting the landfill gas. So that model was already completed as well. And then as part of the phase two, the blower and flare station were also being evaluated, and that has been completed. So basically what's happening right now with phase two is that SCS is working in the final plan, giving us those recommendations of what we need to do to improve the system and move forward. Whether it's adding additional wells, whether we need to replace some header piping or some laterals. And we're also looking to see if we have to do any kind of improvements with our flare system, especially because our flare is almost 30 years old. And normally the life expectancy for flares is about 25 years. And so we're kind of on the edge of the flare system, where undoubtedly a recommendation that's going to come out is that we establish or that we start planning for new flow that would have the capacity. At this point, it would need to have the capacity to be able to extract the gas from the future cells that are going to be put in place or the expansion that's coming. Another part of what recommendations are going to come because SCS is also doing the well density, meaning do we have enough wells positioned throughout the surface of the waste mass, where there's usually it's a 100-foot radius around each well, and so we need to ensure that we have enough capture zone to be able to extract as much natural gas that we need. So this report is due on July 13th. We're expecting to receive the draft soon so that we can start and provide our comments back to the consultant. So that's on the Pima DEQ OAC. Findings of violation, which all of that came out of the same inspection, which was back in April 10 of 2024. EPA took a little bit longer to let us know if they had any issues or any findings that they needed to share with us. So we didn't receive their third FOV, findings of violations, until February 19 of 2026. So it was earlier this year, and we've been working through that. Remember that Carlos, the representative from the city attorney's office and representative from city manager's office, attended a meeting in San Francisco. That was in March. And then from that, we've been working on the response for that FOV as of. We recently submitted on May 28th, the first city response to the UFW. It's not a complete response because SES is still evaluating a lot of the data. Part of the FOV was looking at wells that had been shut down all the way back to 2009 period and before. So a lot of historical information that we had to pull data and have SES evaluate. So they've completed all those evaluations. So we're getting a final response for on some of the violations that were cited by the EPA. To add to that, on March 17, I may have mentioned this report of this year, the EPA and PMDEQ came back to do a follow-up inspection. And since then, we've received from PMDEQ a letter of substantial compliance. So there weren't any additional violations or discrepancies that were noted from the March 17 inspection. But at this point, we have a phase two report that's due by July 13th. And then we also have to finalize your final response to the EPA FOV, which I anticipate is going to be within the next month or two at the most. Any questions?
I make sure I heard you correctly. This, what you just said, that the final response to the POV would be in a couple of months.
The findings of violation, yes. So that's going to be coming within the next month or two at the latest.
Okay, because you're still waiting on some of those reports in July and stuff.
Right. So there are two separate issues. The July report doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the FOV.
Oh, okay.
We're just getting more SES engineers is work helping us craft and write the responses to the violations on the EPA side of it.
Okay.
With the PMDEQ, we basically have met all the compliance requirements, except that we're just finalizing the improvement plan that will guide us into the future to improve and do more improvements into our gas collection system.
So, is there no expectation of reusing the gas? I mean, this is all about flares and the age of the flares and all that. What are we sort of abandon all the rest of that, or this is just interim until we get this settled and then we'll look to using the gas?
Okay. Not necessarily, because as you remember, for lack of gas to energy project, we've been working through that procurement process, and we ended up with three companies. We shortlisted three companies. We worked with the first one that didn't work out. We were working with the second one, and that was a lengthy process over a year. It finally came up to where the company did finally gave us a report. They did a little bit more of assessment on their own out here. And they decided that we didn't have enough landfill gas at this time, or quality gas, to be able to build and move forward towards a landfill gas to energy project. There's still a third company that the city of Tucson has reached out to assess if there's still continued interest in that. If there is, then we'll probably move forward with that third company. If there is no interest, then we're going to close out the procurement process. And just because of the report that we don't have enough gas to successfully build a lack of gas to energy at this time, doesn't mean that we can't have that once we improve the system and we're able to collect more gas and reach that 24, 2500 a standard cubic feet per minute, then because it seems like that's the goal that we're reaching, 2500 SCFMs, to be able to build that landfill gas to energy project. So We're not completely done with our procurement process, but we're not necessarily closing or turning our backs to a lack of gas strategy project. But we do realize that we have to improve our system, and we have to be able to extract enough for a viable system and a viable project.
Are we not collecting enough trash to generate the gas, or what, or is it just this collection system that's the problem?
Right, it's mostly the collection system. And as part of what SCS engineers, the evaluation that they're doing with the density and to ensure that we have enough extraction wells. And then with the landfill gas model, the LandGen model, to determine if we're actually generating the right amount, the proper amount of gas in the landfill that can actually be extracted. So we can't extract 100% for these systems. The most efficient the systems are around 70% extraction rate based on what the model tells us that we're generating. But the model is saying that we are generating the gas, so we just need to be more efficient in being able to extract it.
Okay. So it's not that we're too small in terms of tons of garbage disposed of. It's the extraction system. Okay.
Yeah. And it's based on organics. Of course, the organics are the ones that are going to break down and produce the methane, the gas.
So, Frank, oh, go ahead.
So one thing to keep in mind is that when the landfill gas model is generated, if we had the proper data to extract the inerts material, the material that's not going to generate any gas, and then the landfill gas, the LandGen model is, it becomes more focused. But we don't necessarily at the scale, because we don't necessarily have an updated waste characterization study for our landfill, we can't be very precise. So there's still that little bit of error there where we may be estimating that we're generating more than we actually are generating at this time. But that's a small error.
Thinking about the ecology and where we live, we don't add all of the leaves and the annual prunings that say a Minnesota does or a Wisconsin, which would generate gas that it, and that's organic material that breaks down into gas. So it's
Moisture has a lot to do with it too.
Moisture, yeah, rain,
moisture and water that we
moisture
lack.
too. Yeah.
We don't get as much rain as some other regions.
So do you guys, are you getting help with all these reports, or are all these reports being put together in-house, like you or in,
Yeah, no, we definitely are. We are working SCS engineers. There are consultants,
Okay.
and they're the ones that are working with us to prepare the assessments that they're doing on site, which a lot of the field work, and then also putting together the report. So we're
Okay.
working together in tandem. When they submit their reports, their draft reports, and we review them and ensure that all the data is in there. We provide feedback, so it's back and forth correlation.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
Thank you. Are you, and then let's move on to collections, the collection updates, and equipment updates.
It's me again. I'm
It's
going to be
you.
covering for
Okay.
Mr.
I didn't
I'm going to
see.
be
I didn't
covering
see
for Mr.
Jose.
Motibo. Yeah,
Okay.
Jose was not available, so I'll go over his report and the notes that he gave me. So, I'm not going to go in more detail into the request for proposal that Mr. Tapia covered in reference to the additional monies for the graffiti abatement team cleanup and the homeless cleanup portion of it. So he pretty much covered it on according to these notes. So but just kind of give you a few things here with collections. For the week of June 15th through the 19th, it's the Waste and Recycling Workers Week. So this is an opportunity for, you know, the department. They are doing things here for all the employees within the department to recognize and basically say thank you for the, you know, the job that they all do. So a couple of things that they're going to do during that week. A committee had set up several things that throughout the week. So for example, on Monday, they're going to give out like a, well, they call it a goodie bag. They're going to have little giveaways, a sun hat and like cooling towels, sunscreen, things for that, you know, to try to help and prepare our employees that are always out in the sun and working in the heat and all that. So a little giveaway that they're going to give out, a real nice sun hat that they're going to be getting. And then on Tuesdays, they're going to bring in vendors to I believe the landfill and to ReCommunity, where they're going to be giving out hot dogs. So they're going to be giving out like a lunch. Everyone will get a couple like little tickets and so forth, so they'll get to redeem it and get a couple hot dogs for their lunch and all that. And then Wednesday they're going to be doing breakfast burritos. So they're going to pick them up and distribute them to everybody. And then I believe that's when at that time, later that morning, the mayor is going to go out to the landfill and do a proclamation out at the landfill. So they're setting up with that on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, it's going to follow up with a shaved ice snow cone things for everyone. So they're going to, we're getting a vendor, Kona Ice. They're going to go out to the landfill and set up out there for a short period of time and just give everybody, you know, a little treat. And then in the afternoon, they'll be here at Park Anaho and at our park, you know, where they come and park the vehicles at the end of the day. So a little treat for the operators that come in. So I just, that's kind of just a rundown over the week for the recognition for the department and the employees. Let's see. Homeless cleanup from little stat from May 22nd, 2025 through May 28, 2026. Environmental Service Department participated in 18 deployment operations in support of safe city initiatives, addressing a total of 80 camps and facilitating the removal of 50 tons of debris. So I think the big one that they did was 100 acres. But they were out there. That's a lot, you know, 50 tons of debris that they got to do to date. And let's see. Recruitment update. So for the solid waste equipment operator, we have 11 available positions. They're in the process of trying to hire at least 19 that are on the hiring list. Seven already accepted the job offer and are moving through the process with HR with these candidates and waiting for backgrounds. They have to do a motor vehicle, a driving record, and then they'll, you know, following up with a drug screen. And then once that's done, then they'll come to us, and then, you know, we'll put them in a training. What you call it, in a training cycle. One thing to point out with our these operators is that they go into a whole week in class training where we cover a lot of topics in reference from driving to drug and alcohol to, you know, PPE, heat awareness, so many different subjects that we cover in-house. And then after, once they're done with that, they get turned over to a trainer. and they'll be with that trainer up to 6 weeks. So we give them at least up to 6 weeks to understand and grab the scope of the position of being an operator. And at that time, from the 4th week to the 6th week, we're hoping that they can understand the fundamentals of operating the vehicle, how to service a container, how to inspect the vehicles, everything that they can do, as under the watch of a trainer. And at that point in time, that trainer, along with the supervisor, will determine, okay, this person is ready to go on his own. And once that happens, he'll be on his own for the next 12 month that on that probation to, so that way they can, assess and see their progression and coach them and train them if they need to, so that way they can see, is this person going to work out as a, equipment operator with here in collections. The other position that they're hiring for is environmental service workers. Right now they have 6 available positions. They interviewed 16 candidates and placed them on an eligibility list. And with these folks here, they're the ones that can go to the landfill. And or here with our brush and bulky people, they're basically the helpers. They're the ones that are out there doing a lot of the legwork, picking up, assisting our skid steer operators, or out there at the landfill, moving not only commercial vehicles in to dump out, but the public. So and policing and maintaining the facility out there. So they're the folks that do a lot of the work in reference, and also with the operators that go out there with the BMV. I don't have any data on vehicles at this time, and that's basically the notes that I was given. Any questions? Just short, sweet.
So tell us a little bit about the trainers. Are they employees of the city, and do they work with the city full time, or?
Yeah, so when they're in the driver's status, these trainers, they're actual drivers.
Okay.
So in the collections, which would be with residential, picking up individual cans throughout neighborhoods, and then our commercial, they have what they call task forces. And residential, there's 5 of them, and in commercial we have 2. And so what they do is, each task force, they will designate somebody that demonstrates that they know the scope of the job. They all are always showing that they're checking out their vehicles like they should. They're efficient in their running of their routes, and they're not showing any kind of little shortcuts with these guys to get in trouble, hence getting in an accident. So we really put a lot of emphasis on these folks that will help out the supervisor coach and develop these new employees, these drivers,
Sure.
to make them into a collection operator. When we get new employees, they come from various backgrounds, over the road truckers, bus drivers, people from the C-MEX, from the mines. We get them from all over the place, and it's up to us to, with our trainers, is to, basically shape them, mold them, make them shine, and make them an operator, so that way they're out there working safely, on an everyday basis. So it takes a lot with these trainers of patience, because when they're in that vehicle with that new employee, and they're basically, at a crawl, and that's what we want. So not to hurry them up or anything like that. They have to have a lot of patience. They have to have a lot of, always constantly, okay, what are you going to do in this scenario? What are you going to do that? I need you to do this. So there's a lot of talking and coaching that goes along with it. So, we have a lot of different operators, but there's those ones that, they don't have to be the top Michael Jordan level. It's just, as long as they demonstrate that they're operating safely, efficiently, and they know exactly what that vehicle can and can't do, that's what we rely on, and as far as our trainers.
Do you have any women that are drivers, or? are coming through the
Yes,
process?
ma'am. Yes, ma'am, we sure do. We have one of our gals. She works out at what we call container maintenance. Well, yeah, she's out there. She does a lot of delivering of containers that are refurbished. So she drives out there, what they call the container maintenance section. And then here in collections, we have two girls that operate, and they're very versatile. They can drive pretty much any vehicles that we have out here, and that's one thing that we really try to put emphasis and coach and with our drivers is they the more they learn other vehicles, they become basically very versatile, and we can depend on we can. It allows each section to operate a little bit better because we can actually, do things here early in the morning. If we ever had that opportunity to, come in and witness what happens here, it's called a controlled chaos. It's chaotic early in the morning. Things will fall apart quickly, even though they have a plan set up. So sometimes they have to move folks around. In different routes, different places, so that way, they can, we can all cover all our routes. So when we have folks like that, it's really, really helpful that these, supervisors have that ability to, ask other people to do different various jobs. So, and then I want to say in our B&B section, we just had one, but a girl that was one of our operators, but she just recently retired not too long ago. So yeah, we always encourage, and it's always good to see that we have, more now than ever, women that are in this field.
Yeah, thank you.
Good. Thanks.
Mario,
So
in the chat, I shared a photo of our female driver, or one of them.
good.
any
Oh.
other questions?
Okay.
But you
I'll
see,
have to follow up with Mr. Montijo in reference to the vehicles. I know they had a discussion about it not too long ago, but I was I'm not he didn't really emphasize anything on that. So
okay.
that being said, that's a collection report.
Thanks so much. A
You're welcome.
lot of information.
Okay.
All right, let's move on to item 9, future agenda items. I guess when Jose comes back, we can get him. To give us the
Sure. Okay.
information on the vehicles. So,
I'll relay that information to him.
okay. Anything else?
Can't think of anything.
Okay.
I guess the only other thing would be what's happening with Bifusion. Are they moving the equipment in, or have they tried making some blocks and have stuff from the where the plastic is stored moved over and so forth? How's that progressing?
Okay.
Margo, I think at the last full ESAC meeting, Frank gave
Yeah.
I
a think
report
Carla.
that they don't expect Bifusion to move in until like August.
Oh, okay. I didn't quite
Yeah,
understand
he's
that
getting
either.
pushed back. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, and we'd like to hear from Trevor about what's happening with his. He gave us a preliminary report. Do you have a. How did those big sales go?
Oh,
Got
yeah.
lots of good
Well,
publicity.
okay. Well, you said that you wouldn't know about the students till what, August or?
That was the original expectation, but we've already gotten some initial numbers.
Okay, so.
So I can certainly share that. I could share it at next week's full
Okay.
ESAC meeting as well.
Right.
Here, this doesn't have all the numbers, but I'll throw a quick link into the chat with some teaser information that literally just came out today. So,
Well, you've got great publicity, I must say.
yes.
Oh, here it is. Damage
Yeah, that's
record
it.
breaking.
Right.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I'm just kind of hustling a little bit. We don't have a call to audience. And for item 11 at 4:42, our subcommittee has adjourned. So,
Very good.
okay. Very good.
Thank you all.
Bye,
Hey, good
everyone.
meeting. Good meeting.
Lots
Yeah.
Have a
Good
good night, everybody.
information. Yeah.
Very good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very
Bye
much.
bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.